Blog Talk Radio.
You are in the bullpen with Dr. T, hosted by Dr. Marvin Thompson, an empowering educator featured on CNN, PBS, CBS Morning Show, and the Oprah Winfrey Network. In the Bullpen with Dr. T covers the relevant issues of the day affecting our schools, families, and communities. Here's your host, Dr. T.
Good evening, everybody. Tonight we are talking about police and schools. As many of you know, I've been working on a documentary on the school-to-prison pipeline called Zero Tolerance. We've been taking a look at policing and its impact, zero tolerance policies and their impact on our youth. We already know that policing in our schools has created a pipeline, a literal pipeline from the classroom. We're even seeing this translated into the behaviors of teachers in our classrooms. Basically, it results in policemen becoming the disciplinarians in schools. This is how we have this problem. Well, in New Jersey, earlier this year, and just recently, their state assembly passed a bill that will allow police students how to interact with policemen. So tonight we're going to talk about what the impact of that is. And it is amazing to me in this climate that we have today that we have police who are on fire for their policing tactics. Forget school for the moment, but just overall. And they're going to go into schools to talk to young people about how to interact with them. That's what the premise of this is. Here's the video.
I have one name.
Philando Castile. That's all I have to say. If you remember Philando Castile, everything he was supposed to do, to follow the orders of the he was for something minor, a minor traffic stop, as they like to call it. And as he reaches forward at the request of the officer for his ID, he followed all the orders. He had a concealed weapon, which informed the officer of what he was supposed to, and he was still killed. So I'm asking the question, how in the world is this particular practice, this new curriculum in New Jersey of cops going in to explain to young people how to interact with them, is going to change that outcome? That's what I'd like to know. To help us through this is a good friend of mine, someone I greatly respect. It's Dr. Walter Farrell. You are a frequent listener of this show. Over the last 2 years, I've had Dr. Farrell back quite frequently at the request of the audience because when he brings it, he just tells you how it is, and I can't find too many people who are as knowledgeable about the educational system and its constructs, its political constructs, as Dr. Farrell. I'd like to welcome our frequent guest and highly esteemed Dr. Farrell. Dr. Farrell, are you there?
Yes. Thank you for inviting me, Dr. Thompson.
Man, you are welcome anytime in this place. I'm not even going to waste men's words with this. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And let me tell you my first thought, Dr. Pelz, how this came about and under what context. But when I saw this, it just said to me that these policemen, as much scrutiny as they've been getting, not just from the public, but from the Department of Justice, from Chicago to New Orleans, where I am, to every major city in the United States, with all of the civil rights violations that they've had, many are under supervision by the Department of Justice. Some of their hiring practices, the ineptitude in leadership and inadequate training, they want to fix their problem by projecting to other people. That's what stuck with me. And they're doing it with kids. I'm lost. Help us understand how this thing even got off the ground.
Well, you have to follow the money. Because what has happened in Texas, they had a African-American female state representative and an African-American male state senator introduced this legislation so that the conservative white hands would remain clean. And they got it through. And after it passed, the African-American state senator said he didn't know whether it would do any good or not. But I'm convinced from what I've been able to dig up that this legislation is being drafted and developed by whites, conservative whites, and then given to African-American legislators to run with. And this is their way of dealing with the excessive assault of African-American males and females who are getting butchered on the streets in our urban and large urban and small urban communities. And I said, this is the problem. We don't need to fix the police. We need to fix the victim. And if they and what they are promoting, and no one says this out loud, is for African-American males and females of color to become compliant, deferential, submissive, and then nothing will happen to you unless you do something that makes us white cops mad. Then if you do that, that's still your fault because you shouldn't have done that. In New Jersey...
Well, this kind of goes...
Go ahead.
Well, this kind of reminds me. I had a guest on, James Ford Jr., a couple of months ago. He wrote a book, Locking Up Our Own. And for those listeners out here who think what Dr. Farrell's saying is crazy, it's not. Because in this book, James Foreman used to be the law clerk for Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. And in his book, he talked about the role that black politicians play in locking up minorities. So everything you're saying falls in line with everything that James Foreman wrote about in his book.
This has been going on for quite some time where African-American politicians have been behind legislation and programs that have furthered the victimization of African-Americans. For instance, I know everyone has probably heard of this widely heralded and very good book a couple of years ago by the Ohio State University law professor Alexander, the New Jim Crow, in which she, as others have in recent years, deeply documented, you know, why, you know, laws, practices, policies, biases that result in the disproportionate number of African Americans and Hispanics, males and females, disproportionately populating our prison systems. And what she indicated is this started in, you know, it's always been a problem during the administration of William Jefferson Clinton with his crime bill, which he put more police officers on the street and strengthened laws and statutes that would send you to jail. Well, if you have if you increase the number of police officers exponentially, then they got to do something. You know, they have to have work to do. So their work primarily was locking people up, especially people of color. And in that prime bill that was passed in the mid-1990s, almost the entire Congress supported it and aggressively supported it. And many of those, more than half of them, are still there. And nobody's talking about that.
What would make them support this? I know in the book that I referenced, James Forman, you know, there's sentiment. Even in the black community, people talk about, in the white community, they'd like to bring up black-on-black crime. And yet, in the book, he talks about the fact that many black politicians are like every other citizen. They want to address crime. But in doing so, they become complicit in this process that literally targets their communities, because we know what the numbers are in the white community. They're not far off. You know, 80% of over 80% of white people kill each other are killed by white people. Just like,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So but the application of those laws doesn't play out that way.
Without question. But what we're talking about here, first of all, we have to follow the money, because what white conservative PACs, conservative individuals are doing now, just as they're doing in the move to privatize the nation's public schools, they give everybody money. If you will carry my school choice water, I'll give you a campaign contribution. If you will be tough on crime, you'll get campaign contributions. And this is all about the money. And the African Americans essentially don't have to put on blackface, if you will, to go into their communities when they do to explain this. Because this bill that came up in New Jersey, there was, you know, 8 African American and Hispanic women co-sponsored this bill in the state assembly. Not one of them held a town hall meeting in their legislative districts to get an input from their constituents. Because what African American citizens do, if they elect somebody, then that person can do any evil and they will keep voting for them because they are African American. To their credit, white folks don't do that. If you don't care out, and mind you that the agenda of many white communities is very conservative, but if you don't carry out that agenda, they will remove you from office, lickety split, and put up there. We keep people in office for years. For instance, a former legislator in New Orleans, Dollar Bill Jefferson, who stole hundreds of thousands of dollars from created crooked kickback deals with a host of companies and individuals that didn't have no connection to his congressional district in New Orleans. And the only reason he was found out, convicted, and now in the middle of a 10-year sentence in the federal pen is that he crossed up some white people that he was kicking money back to, who ratted him out in order to get a lesser sentence. But had he not gotten caught, he'd have still been there, because he was a congressman for nearly 2 decades. And that's the pattern across this country. You know, just last year, Chaka Fatah, the congressman from Philadelphia, was convicted where he had kickback schemes involving his son, himself, and his wife with federal dollars. Now, they're doing some serious time, but he was a brand in Philadelphia, because black politicians are not held accountable. And when they do something criminal, the law enforcement agencies hold them accountable. But other than that, they'll keep getting reelected again and again and again when they're representing African Americans. And this issue only came to the fore when, in my weekly columns, I raised it in New Jersey, and the column was distributed all over the state. And before the Senate could vote on it, they had to call a hiatus on the bill. So there's been no movement on this teaching students, and it was aimed at students of color, how to interact with police after information about it got out to the broader public, because we're in the middle of a gubernatorial race and a Democratic candidate in the state of New Jersey cannot win without an overwhelming vote of black and Hispanic population with a corresponding turnout equal to those of whites. And so the African-American woman who initially introduced this legislation, State Representative Sheila Oliver, State Assemblywoman Sheila Oliver, she is running as the lieutenant governor on a Democratic ticket. And if she's elected, she'll be the first African-American male ever elected to that office. And quiet now, because you can't make a campaign case out of that when you're out of that bill, A11, 114, because you can't take that into black communities and campaign on that basis.
Well, I'm going to talk about that. Yeah, I'm going to talk about that bill for a minute, because this is what Dr. Farrell is referencing, is bill number 1114 in New Jersey. And here's basically what it says. As part of the implementation of New Jersey student standards, learning standards, social studies, beginning next year, 2018-19, that all students must be provided instruction with information on two things: the role and responsibilities of law enforcement officials and providing for public safety. And that ought to be interesting. And number two, an individual's responsibilities to comply with a directive from a law enforcement official. Wait, there's a third one. And an individual's rights under the law in interacting with law enforcement officials. Dr. Farrell, just reading that, all it says to me, here's what I picture. Policemen are going to go in and tell kindergartners, first graders, all the way through 12th grade, this is what I want you to do when I stop you. And this is how I will probably not shoot you. And here are your rights when I tell you to comply. That's what I hear.
Oh, absolutely. You hear it correctly, because only after I raised the issue in the middle of July did they add that piece that they would teach the students their rights. Before that, it was teaching students how to interact with police. That piece was, you know, they start adding pieces to it. And they had invited six groups to participate in the drafting of the curriculum. Two of those groups are police represent police organizations, and then they had the teachers union, the ACLU, and the NAACP. So the police have operational control if this law is ever passed, and I don't think it will be now because too much controversy has emerged. If it were to pass, then police would have operational control of curriculum development. This is crazy. It's absolutely
so the police
insane.
The police are writing the curriculum. Is have a hand in writing it? Assuming there are going to be educators involved in this.
Yes, but they invited six groups: the NAACP, the ACLU, the New Jersey Education Association, and the statewide Association of Police and the Fraternal Statewide Fraternal Order of Police. You know, so the police had the greatest. Now this is an educational issue, but the police groups had the greatest representation. That makes no sense.
What is, I mean, you know, under the premise of we're going, I'm going to assume, if I'm talking to the people who put this together, the Fraternal Order of Police, the New Jersey State Policemen's Benevolent Association, you and I both know that they serve their organizations. They do not serve the public. But
absolutely.
If I were to talk to them, my guess is that they would say that this is community building.
Oh,
am
absolutely.
I right? What? But when I both
no question.
Community
about
building, this entire instruction, and I'm going to, you know, you're an educator. We both are educators. When you provide instruction to young people, you put them information that empowers them. But this particular model only seems to empower policemen to do what they're already doing. There is nothing in this process that suggests that they are changing their behaviors. They're basically saying, you know who we are, tell you, so you stand a less of a chance of getting shot. But we ain't changing nothing.
Oh, absolutely. But that's it. And now that I've put the information out in New Jersey, most people is most African Americans are viewing this as a bill to teach kids of color how to genuflect, how to engage in obedience to the police. And nowhere in this, you know, because there should be two levels of training going on. One being if you're going to do this fairly and equitably, one, teaching kids their rights and on their interaction with police, and the other one, giving police officers cultural competence training. And that wasn't part of this. Is all aimed at the people who are being victimized, not the people who are doing the victimized. And
you know,
And the police, what this was, if you follow it to its absurd conclusion, was a way for the police officers to keep assaulting African American and other kids of color in large and small urban communities. And then now have an additional alibi, you know, coupled with the standard one, I fear for my life. Then they can say, I fear for my life, but we also tried to teach these individuals some, and they didn't learn. So now you got other people to blame. I fear for my life, and the reason I fear for my life, because the teachers who are teaching the curriculum didn't give the students the proper instruction. So we can blame the teachers and we can blame the students. But even more disconcerting is the fact that in 2002, the New Jersey state legislature passed a law called the Armistead Law. You know, after the, I guess named after the slaves who captured that ship back in the 18th century.
Right.
And then they were supposed to have the Armistead curriculum, which would be a curriculum to be taught just like this police class in all schools, to infuse African-American culture and history into the K-12 curriculum. That law has been on the books for 15 years. in 15 years, it has not been implemented in 3% of all of the school districts in the state. It has been poorly funded, and they have one staffer who directs the Amistad office for the state, an African-American female, very competent, very bright, and she has a secretary. So it's her job to implement something that no school districts, almost no school districts, will sign on to, so it's not moved anywhere. And so I pointed out in my last column, people are raising the question, why don't you implement Amistad? You've had 15 years to implement it. It hasn't occurred, but you pass this police deference, which I refer to as the police deference bill, in July, and you're going to have that ready to go online the fall of 2018. That doesn't make any sense to me. But, you know, when you have the goal, you make the rules. So what they have is these African-American females and other fronting this legislation. And now that is out in the open and people are beginning to discuss it, everybody is acting like, where did that come from? Like it appeared by itself. And there hasn't been a single word raised about it on the campaign trail, even though the primary author of the bill is on the ticket. And when she was questioned about the bill in September the 9th, she said, well, some of the white communities wanted to learn about this and they were interested in getting info, which was, it was nonsensical. She hadn't expected to be asked that question, and she didn't answer it, nor did the governor answer it. So what they're doing now is shut down all discussion of it in the legislature and hoping they can slide to November the 7th and get elected without it becoming an issue.
What made New Jersey special that this particular curriculum and this idea popped up there? Chicago, why not Atlanta? What is there something unique about New Jersey, whether it's the police force, the community, or a problem? What made them take a look at this? Or, and let me throw this out here, because I've learned one thing about this world. You said it, follow the money, number one. And number two, something like this starts, it's just the beginning. Is this the gateway to opening this type of curriculum across the country?
Now, they've already had some versions of it in New York and Texas, the state of Texas. It has not been well received in either venue. But what is occurring is that they look for soft spots, and they keep pushing, passing out money. And if they get somebody who will run with it, then they'll run. It is pursuing the same, I know, President Trump's favorite person, Vladimir Putin, had a saying. He said, you move ahead with a bayonet. When you feel something mushy, you keep pushing. If you run into steel, you stop. And so they keep testing politicians, especially African-American politicians, across the country to see who will go for it. Because their view is that we need somebody. They want to get a white politician to front it, because then it will look like it is. You know, it will look like a plantation. So they want to identify African-Americans, and then the white politicians can join them. They can join them, and that's how they are proceeding now. And, you know, you have all these organizations, these right-wing organizations who have this money. They pass it out, and everybody takes money, you know. And we have as many black hands, reaching out, taking some of this conservative money, as you do have white hands all across the country. And many in the the Congressional Black Caucus who take that money. Because this is how you push your agenda, you know, and they find they can have African Americans politicians just as malleable as white politicians. If you will note that two of the major public advocates of legalizing marijuana is Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey. Because you have tens, hundreds of thousands of African American males and females right now serving time on marijuana charges. You know, trafficking, use, and the like. And so who better to have somebody push for the legalization than a popular black senator? And then when it's passed in the state, all of the dispensaries for the distribution of marijuana will be controlled by conservative white folks.
Well, we've got and a caller on the line. Let's see what their thoughts are. Caller 4727, who are we speaking with?
Hello,
caller, you there? What's your call?
Yeah, how you doing?
We're doing pretty good, man. How are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm in Atlanta.
All right. So what's on your mind, my friend?
Yeah, I hadn't heard the majority of the conversation. I've heard, you know, bits and pieces since I've been listening, and I saw the title. So you guys are presenting this idea of the police meeting with children and teaching them how to better interact with them.
That's what New Jersey is presenting. It's a new bill that passed in New Jersey, and it has two major components to it. Actually, three. Since you missed the first one, I'll run it down. Some listeners may have missed it as well. So basically, it's a standard of learning. There's components to it that the police will go in, provide instruction to students on the role and responsibilities of law enforcement and provide public safety. To give information about individual responsibilities to comply with a directive from a law enforcement official, and lastly, an individual's rights under the law in interacting with a law enforcement official. So that's the curriculum that's being proposed in New Jersey to go along with social studies starting next year.
If they can get it through the Senate. But one critical piece, now they're going to farm the responsibility, the primary instruction out teachers, you know, social studies teachers in K-12 education across the state. And they would have training for the teachers to do this if it were to pass. But the police and their supporters are behind it, pushing it. You know, they're steering it, but the implementation will be by, you know, majority and minority teachers throughout the state, because it will be part of their job responsibility. The police and some others will just help create the curriculum.
This sounds like when you start off with a faulty premise, no matter how well-intentioned or detailed your idea ends up being a disaster. Because for one, you're saying, okay, it's on the citizen to know the ways in which you must approach the officer when, you know, having an encounter. When the reality is you need to train the officer who has the power and authority, who has the state behind him, essentially, when they go out as an employee of the state. So to put the premise on the citizen, and let alone to teach children that, I think it's not only ridiculous, but at a certain point, this is laughable, man. Our biggest problem right now is we need actual prosecutor and DA reform. The idea that they for the most part, are subservient to the groups that they are supposed to either prosecute if it comes to it, or, you know, bring charges to, is the central problem that we have. So the people who do wrong end up not being convicted. So, I mean, that's the dynamic that has to change. People can't keep getting elected on tough on crime, and then you swarm police officers into one area, and then we end up with the same old fiasco we always end up with. So I don't think they are inherently bad, but I do think the system puts them in a rough spot, and before you know it, it turns into, decade after decade after decade of problems. But, teaching the children, that's some authoritarian state. Like, if you heard of North Korea doing that, you would say, wow, that's really, really weird. So to hear people in America actually proposing that is really, really disappointing. And I think after 9/11, man, we just had a different kind of hero worship when it comes to certain state employees. That would be firemen and policemen. And not only is criticizing them looked at as anti-American, but we've gotten to the point where we're not even rational about whether they're doing a good job or not in each area that they're in. So I just wanted to throw my 2 cents in. But, yeah, this is an interesting conversation, man. So I got
Let me ask you, what do you think the response would be in Atlanta if a bill like this were proposed where you are?
Down here in Atlanta, I don't think that would go far. But if you start going to rural Georgia and the rest of Georgia, I think that bill will be really, really popular. And I think a lot of times we jump into things without thinking about the consequences. And for all the people who always tell me they're worried about big government, they always come up with some big government solutions. Boy, I tell you.
You're right about
You're
that.
You're absolutely right, brother. You're absolutely right.
Thanks for the call, brother.
Indeed. Y'all have a good one.
All right, you too,
Thank
my
you.
Friend.
His remarks were spot on. They hit
every target.
And it is laughable and foolish, but what's so sad about it, that this legislation was put forward by African-American female and Hispanic female legislators. They were the leads. And then after they put it out, and didn't get negative pushback, then all of the white guys and white women fell in line behind them, because the proposed legislation is victim blaming, and most of them think it's the people who get shot is their fault.
Of course.
Even
Orlando
when
Pistol.
Yeah, even when you know. When Laquan McDonald, who was shot on the street 16 times in Chicago, a main street, while walking away from a group of officers, one officer shot him 3 times, which put him on his street, and then he shot him 13 more times, which was shown on the tape. And the officer was finally indicted after the tape was released, and now he's saying he feared for his life, as was the case just last week in St. Louis when the white officer was ruled not guilty for shooting the unarmed male, most of the shots in the back, and he said he feared for his life, because all you have to do is say, you feel for your life, you can get away with murder.
Literally.
Yeah.
Well, when the president stands up and he says that he can go out and shoot somebody in broad daylight and get away with it, what are you saying? And people cheer to that. When the president goes on and tells police officers, you don't have to be nice, you don't have to cover their head and put them in the car, what's that saying? And you're now going to riot. And in the classrooms, as you were suggesting or have learned, that it won't be the policemen doing it. They're going to pass that responsibility on to teachers. Guys, I've been a teacher, and I can guarantee you that if I'm standing in a classroom telling my kids, okay, guys, it's time to talk about how to interact with policemen. As a black man, those kids are going to look at me and go, have you lost your damn mind?
We know what goes on out here. Are you trying to sell us up the river? What's wrong with you? I can't see that conversation going well in the classroom. I just can't see it.
I would
not going to go the way
agree.
They think it's
going
to go. I know if it's me in that classroom, I know if it's my kids in that classroom, it's not going to go well. And I will also say, this is my thought, there will be some teachers who are not going to, I'm not going to say they're not all going to not want to. There are going to be some who are going to go, good, I'm going to go crazy with this because I believe it. I'm now given power. And this is that police state that our caller talked about. You are now extending a police state into the classrooms to our children. That's bullshit. And any way you cut it, that is not the role of a teacher. And if policemen want to do this, why don't you hold community meetings and you do it yourself in your own house with your own curriculum, and those who will want to come will come. Hold children, 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds hostage. How do you think that's going to play out in a predominantly minority neighborhood with overwhelmingly white teachers? I'm in New Orleans, and I just described that dynamic. How do you think that's going to play out? It's not.
I would agree with everything that you said and what the caller's observations.
That's my speech for today. I just don't see this working.
I think that the bill will be derailed in New Jersey. Not because they don't want to do it. They really want to do it. But politically, it has become toxic, you know, because nobody can go out and say I'm running for governor and then say I support this bill. So what everybody wants to do now, they want it to go away, and they want me to stop writing about it.
I do not want you to stop writing about it, because if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have known it had gotten this far. What have they put a referendum to the public? I know when I read your newsletter, and it was, folks, I'm going to actually post that newsletter on my Dr. T Educates page, because you will get some details that we have discussed here and won't have time for, and it might lead you to look down some other roads that I began to look down. Did they even put this to, I know they didn't have a public hearing on it, but is this bill put towards a referendum to the public? Any discussion whatsoever to create awareness that is even out there?
Nope. It had limited discussion. It was proposed in the assembly. It came up, and everybody in the assembly that day voted affirmatively for it. And only did it begin, was there discussion about it after my articles came out and I began to bring it to people's attention. And people read it and distributed it to their groups. And now, and all of a sudden, the legislators went silent. They haven't said anything about it. And they've avoided the governor and the lieutenant governor have avoided talking about it on the campaign trail, because, as I indicated earlier, brown and Asian folks in New Jersey don't vote for the Democrat in substantial numbers. He can't win. That is the pattern, you know, and that was part of the problem. And I think that the Republican who shouldn't win now has a chance to win if she can get this issue out, although she would support it. But, you know, she could make this an issue, because this is part of the reason that Hillary Clinton lost. Because in this time, she got the lion's share of the black vote and a tremendous 90-plus percent share of the African-American female vote, and high 80s of the overall African-American vote. What she didn't get was turnout, because a lot of adults with middle-aged adults and adults with children remember her remark about young black males being super predators during the 1996 election. And she never apologized for it and tried to avoid discussing it. And if black folks had turned out at the rate they turned out for President Obama in Wisconsin, that she lost by 22,000 votes. Michigan, that she lost by 12. And Pennsylvania, that she lost by 68,000, she'd have been the president. And she could have got all of the votes that she came up short in those three states out of one or two cities in each of them. She could have got all of the votes she needed out of Milwaukee and Racine, Wisconsin. In Michigan, she could have got them out of Detroit, Flint, and Lansing, Michigan. And in Pennsylvania, she could have got them all out of Philadelphia. And I think that this could happen in this gubernatorial election, and I think we'd get a terrible Republican elected, but there's nothing for black folks to be energized about in turning out the vote. You know, and I think that could very well happen on November the 7th. That's why everybody has gone quiet on this legislation. Nobody wants to talk about
it. And once you grasp that, laws produce revenue, and that's two predator state increase in the growth of youth detention centers, the number of youth being sent through legal and criminal justice system. So that moniker, that super predator moniker, probably not apologized, but a lack of an apology and the foment allowed it to grow.
Absolutely.
And Carson is like the baby. It's the kindergarten to our prison system. It's a new wave. And I don't think people are paying attention to it. And this is why you presented and brought to our attention is so important, because if it's already in several states now, New Jersey is to a whole other level. And I just don't see this ending. We won't end it.
Oh, absolutely. If it's going to be stopped, we have to stop it. We have to stop it. And if we don't, it'll go in the law. But I think now you have Democratic legislators, especially the Senate, trying to kill it because they want to win the governorship. Otherwise, people would continue to push it.
Well, I'm glad you brought to our attention. So you really believe this is going to die. You don't see this thing the leg that it needs.
Yeah. If it gets passed, it wouldn't get passed until 2018 after these Democratic senators after the gubernatorial election has been completed. And then I think that both the Democratic governor and the Democrat lieutenant governor, the black woman who proposed, I think they would double back and try to get it through. But right now, the politics won't allow them to do that. So,
well, that's good.
Not for any change of conscience. Put this bill up now, the black community and the brown communities would go crazy in New Jersey, and there's no way they could win the election. And I pointed that out in my columns, and they are aware, too, because, you know, they got the voting logs. They know how how fragile the coalition is in New Jersey for winning. And it doesn't take much, because the current governor, Republican Governor Chris Christie, who served two terms, last time he ran, he got about 30% of the black vote and 29% of the Hispanic vote. that is too much of a minority vote for Democrats to win, and they beat the Democrat by landslide margins, getting over 60% of the vote, because she couldn't excite the African American community. He had a white female running, and you had a Latina female on the ticket, but it couldn't excite the communities of color to turn out and vote for him. So now they know that they got to keep their heads low and not annoy the Asians, the African Americans, and the Hispanics, because they would have no chance of winning.
Well, as you said, the political winds may change. So that's not a comment at all. You're right. No conscience involved in this thing not passing, because as I could see, if one of these candidates keeps this in the desk, wait until they get elected, and then pushes it forward, we have a whole new issue.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So we could delay it for now. For certain, nobody has to do anything now, because they haven't done anything. You know, I turned up the heat because people started becoming aware. And if they win the election, then they could push it through, because they have 4 years to, you know, to kiss up to minority groups. So, but I don't think it has any chance of passing before 2018.
We have time, but you know, maybe you want to start watching other states and see these that are being looking in the back door elsewhere. I had no idea until I talked that this was already in place in Texas and some other place. But my guess also is, Dr. Farrell, that where we will find this curriculum, we'll find high minority student populations.
Absolutely.
Okay. I assume so, because they're not doing this in the suburbs.
Oh, no. They have it on the books, you know, across the state, but everybody knows it's for the minorities. Everybody knows that. So what they want to do is to be able to kill our children and at the same time blame it on our children for not being deferential and compliant enough. See? And they wouldn't even been doing this had there not been all the protests in the various communities, Chicago, Philadelphia, St. Louis, Ferguson, and the like, and then Colin Kaepernick, you know, taking the knee on this issue and not standing up for the Star Spangled Banner, which is one of the most racist songs ever written, because nobody ever gets to the third stanza of Star Spangled Banner, where they're talking about slaves having nowhere to run, and it's very condescending towards slaves. And Francis Scott Key, who wrote it, was an aristocratic pro-slavery bigot of that time period, as most of aristocratic white males were. So I don't think it's going to go away soon.
Well, I don't either. Also, you're not going away soon. So that's good news out here in Virginia. Dr. Farrell's newsletter is always a great read. And Dr. Farrell, I'm going to start posting that every time. I know you put them out every Thursday once a month. I'm going to start posting those out, because a lot of good information is contained in here. I learn something every single time I read it. By the way, you get this you don't have to, you know, just read that one. At the bottom, you get the entire series. And, Doc, I already know you're a smart man. So I know this series is going to turn into a book.
And I'll keep sending it. It'll come out, you know, it comes out every Thursday. So we were off the month of August. And I'll send you the latest one this Thursday.
All right. Looking forward to it. thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for being out here and doing what you do. Folks, I'm going to tell you, just read those letters, because he brings the truth, and he brings you some esoteric information, some secret knowledge that you would not know. And when you read his biography, you'll just know where the knowledge comes from. But Dr. Farrell, thanks again. I know I called you on short notice, and you never say no to me, but I also I don't try to blow on your phone. So thanks for joining me, my man.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Dr. T.
All right, brother. Have a good week, man.
Have a good week.
Folks, that was a man I like to call my good friend, Dr. Walter Farrell. He is a very, very engaged man in politics, as well as education and background. But do some homework on his background. You'll be impressed to see where that knowledge comes from. I'm very fortunate that I'm always able, and I said this, don't worry about welcome, but anytime I ask him to come along, it's a huge topic. He never hesitates, no matter. He is quite a bit. He never says no. I want to take a quick break. Come back. Just going to have some quick commentary. This topic is not New Jersey, just schools and this mentality, the police state mentality. Folks, it's not just the people wearing the badge. If you think it is, you're mistaken. And we're talking about putting that mentality, you're growing mentality in our schools. We have a problem. And we're way past identifying the problem. That's been done. It's time to fix it. We also are doing that, to challenge it. We'll be back to 10 seconds talking about should police train K-12 students and how to interact with them.
Follow Dr. T on Twitter and Facebook at Dr. T Educate, and on the web visit www.drteducate.com. Welcome back to The Bullpen with your host, Dr. T.
All right, we're back. Police training students and how to interact with cops. I want to thank Dr. Farrell for joining us tonight. Folks, one of the things that was mentioned and I became aware of during the show was that in this bill proposal, let me remind anybody who might have joined late, there's three main components to law enforcement officials planning to implement in the state of New Jersey under the student learning standards in social studies beginning the 2018-19 school year, that instruction must provide students with information on these things. Number one, the role and responsibilities of a law enforcement official in providing for public safety. Number two, an individual's responsibilities to comply with a directive from a law enforcement official. And thirdly, individual's rights under law in interacting with a law enforcement official. Now, if you were to just hear that and not in the climate that we're in today, where police, frankly, out of control, when we are seeing officers gun down unarmed men for various reasons, and children and women, with impunity, slap on the wrist. So much so, it has boiled over into our pleasures, the ones where we're supposed to be distracted and focus on sports and athletes and what's going on in their lives, that we can't even do that. Because the consciousness of some of these athletes has been reached to the point where they're acknowledging the injustices, and in doing so, risking their very livelihoods, things that they have prepared for their entire lives, that 90%, more than 90% of the people watching them play could never do. They'd have to make a JKLMNOP league for some of the people in the stands who are to even do it on television or any type of for pay. But anyhow, we're now talking about teaching kids how to interact with policemen under their dysfunctional system. And let me clarify dysfunction. It's not conjecture. Cleveland, New Orleans, New York. Go on. I could go on and on and on. Atlanta. Police departments around the country that, at least, let me say this, at least under the Obama administration, and I do believe it still continues this administration, but for how long and at what depth, we don't know. I don't think much, have been under direct action, corrective action measures. They've been directed to fix their house, clean their house up. Already seen numerous incidents on social media, can't even hide it. And even with the evidence, they're exonerated, go uncharged, walk away, and it's blame the victim. That's the climate that we're in today. While we're in that climate that has not been repaired, that people won't address, that we're still conflict over. The victim approach, which seems to work well among that particular population of people, we're now proposing to go in and teach our young people how to interact with police so they don't get shot, but not require or show any evidence that police have changed their approach with the ply. Folks, Dr. Farrell said it. I think even our caller mentioned it. You hear the same thing over and over and over from our policemen in these situations. Not every, the ones who are involved, the ones when they give their excuse, I feared for my life. My dad served 30 years in the Marine Corps. He didn't talk about his service a whole lot. It was his job, so he saw it. But I remember one specific conversation. There were several, but this one is relevant. He got mad. I can't even remember what he got mad about. I must have been 16 years old. 16 or 17, and I asked him a question about military service, particularly war. And this is a man who served at this time three tours in Vietnam. And I said, well, tell me. And I can't remember the question, but he said, boy, all I can tell you is there were people trying to kill me, and I wanted to stay alive. How about that? But I knew that when I went there. So why am I going to whine about it? No. I looked at my dad in a whole new light. That's like, damn, you, that's facing death. That's accepting the outcome. That's going, hey, I chose this. I knew I was going to put this, you know, fight my country and end up somewhere on the other side of the world that I may die and never step in my homeland again, let alone my own house. Hug my wife, hug my kids. I'm not going to do that, but I'm good with it because I signed up for it. I don't think my dad would have been the kind of man who pulled the trigger every time he was afraid and said, I feared for my life. I didn't know. I didn't mean to kill that unarmed child or unarmed woman. I didn't mean to do that. I was just feared for my life. As many military people will share with you, I've seen this, heard this, read this many, many times. So have you. That the rules for engagement for our enemies abroad have more scrutiny than our police officers here on our own land, our own backyard, our own neighborhood. Soldier fighting across the world has to go through several procedural steps before he can even consider taking off state. Men have to ask, we at level what now? In our country, we know that person trying to kill him. We know that they're trying to kill him. We know that there's an enemy who's firing, who has a laser aimed at their head. But here, there's this deadly force than a soldier in Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere else in the world. Now they're going to go into classrooms. Haven't fixed their own house. And it's how to do their destruction. Or better yet, teachers to have them do it for them. All heralded by politicians who are playing games with our lives. If I hear anybody, and by the way, this New Jersey bill passed 7-6 to nothing. Nobody said no. Nobody said this was bad. 76 members, state assembly persons, say go for it. Auspices that this plan is an act done in the spirit of mutual cooperation. Well, you heard from Dr. Carroll. There was no engagement. So how could there be mutual cooperation? After the fact, yes. But not in the process of creating it. That, my friends, is not mutual cooperation. It isn't. Nobody can sell that. I mean, some people buy it. Some people who are blindly patriotic blindly support agencies because they believe that they're inherently good and all the people in it are doing a great job. We know that's not the case. That's not the case in any industry. But the difference here is this particular agency, this particular entity has the ability to take minimally your freedoms away and ultimately your life. So, yes, there is a greater degree of scrutiny applied when you start examining how they go about mutual respect and cooperation. I don't see it. There is no evidence of it. As a matter of fact, this particular process, strategy that they use to get this bill passed, to even conceive it, are the the things that educators rail against because they weren't involved. We've been talking about this for 25 years. Done. You want it improved. You want to involve people who are affected by it. Well, that didn't happen. That did not happen. We're very clear, even in their bill, committee amendments. There were only two. Number one, the committee amended the bill to provide that the instruction will also include information on an individual's rights under the law and interacting with law enforcement officials. Number two, direct the mission of education and an advisory committee to assist the development of the curriculum. Now, here's the deal. You lost credibility when you did not even get input from the communities where this is going to be taught, but yet you're going to put in an advisory committee. I'll tell you who that advisory committee is, and you're going to see how collaborative this is. Under the amendments, the advisory committee will include a representative of each of the following organizations as selected by the organization: the New Jersey State Policemen's Benevolent Association, the State Fraternal Order of Police, the American Civil Liberties Union of New Jersey, the NAACP, New Jersey State Conference, National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice, the New Jersey Council for Social Studies, the New Jersey Education Association, and the American Federation of Teachers, New Jersey. Did you hear anybody in this list of people who would be advisors? Anybody sound like they're representative of the communities where this will be implemented? No. Not at all. Not at all. This is government. Ruling the mind. And curriculum is the way to do it. It is the best way to control. Then I have to make you, I've got to mandate that you take it. It's part of the curriculum. Your child will do this. I can tell you right now, if my child, if I had it, and I've got a grandson, and if he goes to school, and they're telling him he has to sit here and listen to this, we have a problem. I will make sure that they understand that he will get a zero. He will not stay. I've already had this discussion with him. I'm sure his mother will. I'm sure his father will, as we do in all black homes in America. We already have that conversation. We already have it. Because here's what I know they will not discuss in the classrooms. They will not tell students that police officers can lie to you in the conduct of their duties. Yes, folks, they can. They can use deception to engage you. The Supreme Court just recently ruled within the last couple of years that they can lie to you about why they even stopped you, but I'm sure they won't tell you that. You see, there's two types of truths when it comes to policing in America. It's the one that sells, and then there's the one that kills. And we're now talking about selling death and means of death. You can say whatever you want. They can couch it in the most flowery words ever. But until you change how you do business, how you police a community, not this broken windows policing that you've invented, the bar on what it takes to become a policeman, what it takes to maintain your position as a policeman, that you change your measures of success from quotas and tickets, stop generating revenue to community building with measures that align with that. And trust me, have teachers teach kids how to comply to your dysfunction is not community building. Nowhere is that community building. This topic, this initiative,
speaks to the culture that exists around our children. I've said this a thousand times. Schools are indeed a microcosm of our society. Whatever goes on here ends up in our schools. This is the best example of what I've been talking about. If you can move the dysfunction we're seeing in our streets, now legislate that we're going to train children to become accustomed to that dysfunction and respond to it and comply to it, engage with it under the premise that we're trying to save your lives, because we're going to shoot your ass anyway if you don't. Because that's the message that will be heard. Make no mistake about it. And I don't care if the legislators who present black should be ashamed of themselves. They should be. Anybody in this climate, this culture, of this country at this moment even thinks that this is a good idea, not paying attention, and frankly, isn't worth being heard. Tomorrow morning, join Myla G and I for It Ain't That Early Morning Show. We've got a lot to cover. Last week, we had a full agenda. We never even got to the NFL, and frankly, it worked out. Because my chart went off this week on the NFL. Can't figure out if this man was on the side of the NFL or was he trying to run it in the ground. I don't know. But that and more tomorrow morning. Join us 8 a.m. in the bullpen. You'll find the link. Listen live at Dr. K on Facebook. Until then, have a great evening.
You've been in the bullpen with Dr. T. Follow Dr. T on Twitter and Facebook at Dr. T Educate. And on the web, visit www.drteducate.com. Join us every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern in the bullpen with Dr. T. Become empowered. Get involved.